Hi, this is Danielle from The Jealous Curator, and this is episode 47 of Art for Your Ear. This episode is supported by Saatchi Art, the world's largest curated online gallery offering original art by independent artists from around the world. So, before we get going today, I have to tell you one little tidbit of exciting news. In case you haven't heard me talking about this for the last year or two, I have a new book coming out this fall. Well, guess what just happened? Audible.com is going to make it into an audiobook. And I get to narrate it. It's going to be like the longest podcast ever. Anyway, I am really, really excited about it, and I just had to share. Okay, so today I am talking to LA-based artist Brooke Salzwedel. I have seen his dreamy, layered, nature-inspired work in person, and it is absolutely stunning. Like, take your breath away, how'd he do that kind of stunning? Needless to say, I am so thrilled that I get a chance to ask him all of the how, what, and whys. Now, until today, Brooks has never had a Skype account, so I'm pretty honored that he downloaded it just for us. Okay, let's see if he's actually there. Calling Los Angeles. Hi, Brooks.
Hi.
I'm so happy to finally talk to you.
I am happy to talk to you, too.
And now, but we have no video, so we still don't really know what each other looks like.
Right, yeah. And there was once you were here doing some sort of a presentation or something, and I couldn't make it.
I know, so we've never actually met, yeah. So this is as good as it gets right now. Right. Well, I'm really excited, though, because I love your work.
Thank you.
I saw it when I was in L.A., I'm not even sure when that was, like probably 2 years ago. And Melinda from Good Eye Gallery showed me, and I was just like, what? And so I have lots of artsy questions, but lots of process questions. And I started to read a little bit about you, but I thought, no, I'm just going to ask all my questions and be surprised by your answers.
That's fine by me. Maybe I'll be surprised. Oh.
You could just make stuff up. What would I know? I've done no research at all. So basically, I like to always just kind of go back to the beginning and hear, you know, your background and if you were an artsy kid and did you go to art school or how did you get where you are?
Yeah, I was always an artsy kid for sure. I always kind of like the odd one in the family too, because I was more of the artsy one and into drawing, and all my family would say things like, you know, they can't even draw a straight line with a ruler, and so like they don't know where I came from, really, even though I guess a great grandfather of mine had painted ceilings in churches.
Oh,
very Michelangelo-esque.
Yeah.
Yeah, every time it kind of like art comes up with meeting other people and I'm around my mom or something, she always brings up this story about when I was younger. And I had to do some class assignment, you know, early high school probably. And I guess I was really late with the assignment and I just ran out and like got all these, a bunch of this like long grass and wove a lizard out of grass. And like put it on this log, and she just thought it was the most brilliant thing that I did within like 30 minutes at the last minute. Like she loves to tell that story, and I always think of that art piece too. So I know, yeah, I've just like always done this random art.
Yeah, and so if they're not artsy, what did they think of you going into art? Did they think that that was fantastic, or were they worried for you?
I guess when I finally went into school, you know, college and arts and everything, I was already pretty artsy. So, yes, it wasn't a surprise or anything.
Right.
It was just kind of like, yep, that's Brooks. Yeah.
And where did you go again?
I went to Art Center, College of Design in Pasadena.
Mm-hmm. And I've heard that's amazing.
Yeah, it was great. It was my top choice, basically. I didn't even actually apply anywhere else.
Are you from LA?
Yeah, Southern California.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was your first choice. And so what was your, do you major there?
In something? My major was illustration.
Oh.
And each course is very, or each major is, it's very like clicky, I would say. You know, you kind of like, you take illustration and you don't really see any of the product design students, or like the classes don't, you know, cross over that much.
Right.
So you get to know all the other illustrators very well. There were a few fine art classes that I took thinking like, I really want to be a fine artist, but you know, illustration, you have more, you know, there's more a chance of work, you know,
right.
It would be more, commercial illustration or something like that. But deep down it's, I really wanted to just do, you know, some nice drawings and put them in gallery walls. So
when you finished, did you actually work as an illustrator for a while, or did you just go right into fine art?
I did. No, I actually, right after school, I simultaneously was making, these belt buckles that just kind of like, I happened to start making, I was making really small work out of the same process, which was like layers and resin. And so while I was making these belt buckles, I was also putting together my, illustration portfolio,
mm-hmm.
Editorial illustration, and went to New York and just kind of like literally did the thing where I, you know, put on that illustrator hat and went around to publications and dropped off my portfolio. And then at the same time, like then would go on and put a different hat and go to these fashion stores and, you know, try and show my belts at the same time. And that's kind of like how everything just got rolling.
Did it roll with the belt buckles first, or was it both? Illustration was happening too.
Definitely did better than the illustration. It's very hard to be an editorial illustrator.
Yeah.
You know, they pay very poorly in the beginning, and they expect a lot out of you. It's tough. Yeah. And so I kind of just ended up continuing with the belt buckle direction, and then, just kind of did my own art and tried to do, you know, shows here and there. Thankfully at the time, and still at the time, a lot of illustration work is being seen as fine art.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, are you still doing belt buckles?
Not really. I've thought about revisiting it, and I did make a bunch of them recently for a Kickstarter that I had done, which kind of got me going and excited about it again. And, you know, now that it's been about 10 years since I did them, I feel like I would be able to go about it in a different way and have a different mindset about them.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I just recently put a bunch on my website and didn't promote that. Wants attention.
Yeah. Let me on the podcast.
Yeah. what was I saying? The belt buckles,
So you just put a bunch on your site?
Yeah, I just put a bunch on the site, and without even promoting them or anything, I out of 12, I have 2 left. So,
wow.
So I know that they, you know, people like them, they do well, and it's definitely another kind of like project to do on the side. But right now, I'm kind of into doing a lot of this new work. I went to Alaska for an art residency in Denali, and that kind of fueled this whole new. You know, idea of work and like feeling like a real artist.
That's amazing. How long were you there?
It was 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
That long, but it was really inspirational. It's really great.
Did you take 5 zillion photos?
I did. I actually saw Denali also. It's very rare to like see the actual mountain, you know, not covered in clouds.
Oh.
And late at night I drove, you know, so far north, and it was during the summer, it was light out most of the night as well. And I remember going to, you know, driving down the road, two and a half hours down the road for this lodge, and coming back. And so like 1 o'clock in the morning, there were no clouds around Denali, and just driving down, I kept taking pictures, and I would stop, and then I'd be like, okay, that's enough. And then 5 minutes later, I'd be like, oh no, I need to stop again. And I just kept stopping and taking so many pictures, like, you can't get enough of it. Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Has that made it into your work now?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I have to go and look.
Yeah, one thing that I really noticed out there was, you know, because it's so far north also, you know, when the sun sets, it kind of like, you know, comes from the east and goes to the west and it goes over your head, but it just kind of like came from the side. I felt like there were sunsets, but they were like side sets. And so like, on the right, you would just see this bright, you know, yellow, and then on the left, it would be like this dark, you know, blue. It was weird to see kind of like this you know, this vertical kind of like color change. Yeah.
Wow. Is that in there too?
I'm sorry?
Is that in there too? In your work?
Some of the work. Yeah. Some of the new work.
I got to go and look again.
Trying to kind of simplify the work too. I don't know why, and just put some more color, I guess a little bit more muted color in them. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's one of my questions because, so you grew up in Southern California. Where did this like love of forests and mountains and mist and everything come from?
I think it was mostly like every year, a family friend would take us, me and my brother, to Yosemite, and I really loved it out there. And I think that's the earliest idea of it that I can think of. Mm-hmm. Also, at one point, we lived in Temecula, kind of in the mountains of Temecula. It's kind of wine country and trees and stuff. So that was like during the high school, during my high school years. And I remember, like, I would like plants and animals so much, you know, I would catch lizards and snakes, and even once I caught a tarantula and kept that as a pet.
What?
People like literally called me nature boy sometimes.
Oh my God, there's the title for your next show.
Nature boy?
Yeah.
Great.
Oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah, because I knew you lived in LA now, but I was, you know, your work is so nature boyish. And I thought, I wonder where this comes from.
Yeah.
And so has your work always, like when you were doing illustration, did it always have that sort of feel to it? Or,
when I was in school, I remember trying to explore as many ideas and mediums as I could. But for some reason, I knew I would always come back to some sort of landscape, nature, very muted in color kind of scheme and feeling.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that is? Why with the muted?
I guess I'm not really sure. I think in Art Center we were so inundated by color and textures that I just kind of washed that all away and was like, let's simplify this.
They're so dreamy. Like they have such a dream quality to them.
Thank you.
Probably because of that.
The fog, I'm not really sure. You know, I think that just came out of just drawing and kind of feeling the technique of, you know, shading and everything and having the layers and seeing like different, having the depth, I just to bring the different layers together a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Doing the fog kind of helped mend it together, make it a little more cohesive rather than so distinctly different drawings.
Well, let's talk about those layers.
Yeah.
That's such a cool, I mean, it's hard when you see your work online to really get, I mean, in person, they're just insane. So what are all the layers that are in there?
Yeah. Depending on the piece, there's a few different things. So to the easiest or the most simplified pieces that I have done would just be graphite on a semi-transparency, usually Mylar. And then sometimes I won't even cast it in resin, and it will just be kind of these layers on drawing. So almost like, tracing paper or layers of paper. But it's really hard to keep them together if you don't frame them or something, you know? And then there's, you know, making them, so to keep them all together, so that it becomes one piece is what kind of like, how the resin comes into it. It's not, you know, it isn't really the resin that actually gives it depth. It does give it literal depth, you know, from, you know,
dimension.
Like an eighth of an inch to like a half an inch. But it's actually the drawing and the Mylar that gives it the depth.
Right, and that basically just holds it all together.
And yeah, the resin just kind of holds it together.
And some of the pieces have tape on them. Is that to hold it together, or is that just...
It's just fun.
Yeah.
Fun, weird, random thing to throw in there. I was at this this kind of like Salvation Army type store. Like they just had a lot of really random things in this store. And I saw this stock in the corner of all this like old yellow tape. And I'm not sure what it was used for, but it was, yeah, this old weathered yellow ochre tape. And I loved it so much. And I just took all of it and I still have some 10 years later, and I'll just put it in pieces as kind of like a little bit of this texture, give it some color. Sometimes I'll try and send it, put it so far back in the layers that you don't know it's tape. You just kind of see this yellowed color. And I like that feeling of this toxic kind of pollutant yellow, you know, that's back there.
Wow. Yeah. So cool. I'm so glad I get to ask you all of these things, because I've always thought, I'm like, wow, is that holding it together?
Yeah.
And so that's so cool. And when you do use color, because you've got some that sort of have like pinkies, and yeah. Is that graphite too?
Sometimes. In addition to the graphite, some of the pieces are actually there's sometimes spray paint, there's sometimes watercolor, and sometimes I'll just print something out. There's an image that I took in Alaska where I really liked the background, you know, and I took that image, photoshopped everything out of it, all the trees in there and everything, and just had the kind of like sunset, I would say.
Yeah.
Sideways sunset.
Yeah.
And printed that out and have used that as a layer as well. And sometimes that can go in the front or in the middle or in the back, because it's still kind of, you know, translucent.
And so you print that on Mylar?
Yes, they are. Yeah. Yeah. And sometimes they're printed on, transparency, like actual, you know.
Right. That's so cool. And so do you find, I mean, the whole thing when they're done, they seem just so perfect. But when you're making them, because it's layered, does the whole thing feel experimental every time, or do you have a plan going in?
Yes, that's a very good question. Because sometimes, because I don't really do sketches beforehand. I just kind of like, oh, I like this tree, you know,
yeah.
And I want to kind of like have this in here somewhere. And I like this, you know, this oil tower, I'm going to put this in here somehow. And then I just kind of work around all that. And I'm able to, you know, because of the layers, I'll sometimes like put a layer that I thought would be in the middle back onto the top, you know, sending things back and forward. But yeah, I definitely don't start from a sketch, and it's just kind of like what I just feel it out as I'm going. And
wow, that's
sorry, I'm losing my track of thought right there.
No, that's okay. So do you have a bunch going at a time, so that if you get if one's bugging you and you can't figure out the layers, you can put it aside, or do you just sort of focus on one piece?
No, it's like just recently I've learned to set it aside. If I start to get frustrated with it, get another piece going. And then I find that something that I've figured out in the new piece, I can just go back and throw into the other piece.
I was going to say, like, did layers ever make it over to somebody else? Like when you're,
yes, they do. Sometimes I'll be working on a piece and they might be the same size, and I'll take one of the layers and put it into another one. And sometimes I'll get compositions that way too, where I'll have, you know, I'll be working on three different pieces, but, you know, I really like the trees at the top of this piece that are on one layer, and then I'll go and put it on top of the other piece and see how it feels over there. So then it's almost like I can have so many, you know, compositions out of these three pieces because they're on like, you know, three or four different layers.
Yeah.
So it's like never ending, you know, sketches, I guess.
That's really cool. That must help. Like, I bet sometimes it must just be like you put it down and suddenly after all that frustration, boop, it works because you've thrown some trees on top.
Yeah. And then I'll take a picture of it and then I'll move it around and, you know, take another picture, and then I'll know kind of which direction I like to go in most. Oh, I remember what I was going to say is about the resin thing. And, you know, so I'll have a piece that's ready and I know I have these like four layers, and I'll build the mold, you know, because I have to build a mold around it to pour the resin in, and then I push the layers into the resin. But sometimes, you know, the color might pop out more, or even fade once I put it in resin. It's not it's a little fussy. It's not.
Yeah, resin is kind of scary.
Yeah, it's not very predictable as well. So it's almost when I'm done with a piece surprising to me.
And so do you, I guess you have to embrace that.
Yeah, just go with it. You know, yeah. If it's messed up, it's messed up. And, you know, because I knew how it was going to look before I put it in resin, I might be disappointed with it, but, you know, someone else might not even know what it was supposed to be like.
Right.
So it's a happy accident. You know, sometimes there are happy accidents where it's like, oh, great, I didn't even know it was going to do that. And then sometimes it's like, oh, man, that piece, that tree that I drew way up in that left corner is completely gone.
You right, know? Because, that's the thing is, like, you've put so much effort into drawing and creating all the layers, and then you have to sink it into resin.
Yeah.
I'd be terrified.
Hope the best comes out of it. Yeah, because, and then once it's in resin, I can't do anything with it.
No. And do you ever have to worry about, I mean, I have a friend, Ben Skinner, that works with resin. Well, he used to. I don't know if he still does. But I know that there was issues with bubbling sometimes.
Yeah, that has been just years of practice that has kind of gotten me to work that out.
Okay. That's what has really scared me. I have resin that has been sitting in a box for, it's probably too old to use now.
Yeah.
Because I've always just been too scared to go for it.
Yeah. Well, with that said, the longer you keep it and don't use it, the longer the possibility of it yellowing is. As
right.
Well. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm just not going to use it.
Kind of get also.
Yeah, I'm just not going to use it.
Okay.
How about that? And then so once you've done that and it dries, then it's like a little block, right?
Yeah. It's like a physical, you know, from a quarter inch to, half inch kind of.
Wow. And so then do you frame it or do you show them like that?
I usually frame them. What I have to do is I break it out of the mold, which is kind of fun. It's very satisfying to, because I make it out of acrylic siding. And so I kind of, the acrylic just kind of cracks off of the sides as I'm breaking it open.
Wow.
Like so then there's kind of these sharp edges and I have to sand all those down. And then I might fix a few, you know, blemishes here and there. And then I usually frame them. Yeah, mostly because I think this seeing it from the side and the layers is a little distracting.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
How long does a piece take you, like, from start to finish? I guess it's hard to say if you've got lots going. And
yeah, I've been asked that before, and it's hard to say because, you know, it's usually I'll work on a few different pieces at once for a show, and, you know, I'll put a little bit of time here and a little bit of time there. So I would say, you know, a good normal sized show, I've been able to finish about, you know, a good, you know, maybe like 6 to 8 large pieces in about 3 to 4 months.
Wow.
So
how big are they?
The largest is 38 by 46.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And then I just started working on a larger one that I think is up to 54, I think is the largest side.
Oh my God. That's a lot of resin.
Yeah. I don't know. That's going to be tricky. I might have to do that over like a few days, you know? Most recently actually with the layering and the resin, you know, I said that, you know, I'll do a piece and once it's done, I can't touch it. Because the resin, obviously you can't really draw on resin, and the faces of them are very shiny and, you know, like, ooh, you know, very reflective. But lately I've been pouring the resin and not putting the resin over the very top layer. So I'll just kind of lightly lay the top layer of Mylar onto the resin so that because the Mylar, it has a matte finish to it. So then now it sticks, the back sticks to the resin, and then the face of it is just a matte drawing, but it's still on the resin.
Right.
So it's kind of changing the feeling of the pieces a little bit more. They're softer. And then also I can change stuff on the face of it now because the drawing is actually exposed on the face.
Right.
Of the
piece. That must be tricky to lay it down.
Yes, it is. It's very tricky.
Are you like, so is your goal just to make this as difficult for yourself as possible?
Yes.
You finally mastered getting it all into resin. I know. Now I'll float it on top.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Here. Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, one quick thing I wanted to ask you, and then I'm going to do the speed round with you. There's lots of little hidden things in your work. Yeah. What, like there's little skulls sometimes, and sometimes there's like a little truck, and there's all, like if you look, there's all sorts of little things. Where does that come from?
I guess I just think it's fun to find these little things within them. You know, there's so much going on in some of them, especially the earlier pieces, that I like, you know, the idea of finding these little hidden things, and sometimes they don't have anything to do with the piece, and sometimes they do, you know, like the bones, that was, I did a whole series of pieces with kind of like these hidden, you know, skeletons and bones.
Yeah.
And just coming from a personal, some personal health issues. And then, you know, some pieces will have oil rigs and a lot of, you know, oil derricks and oil ships, and that comes from another personal issue of my father's death. And then sometimes I'll just throw in, you know, a silhouette of, you know, a dinosaur, just because who doesn't like a dinosaur, you know?
Oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's one of my favorite things, is looking at them a little more closely, and, you know, it's like Where's Waldo, but
yeah,
artsier.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you one more thing too. So I did a tiny bit of research just so I, you know.
Yeah.
I'm an interviewer. I guess I should do a little research. And I saw that on your site that you have work at the Hammer Museum.
Yeah.
At the MoCA in LA. Like, did you... okay. When that happened, was your mind blown? Is it still blown? Did it sort of... How did that happen?
Well, the Hammer, it was, so that actually came about with the belt buckles. So I had had a show in San Diego. The woman who owned the gallery was friends with the store buyer at the San Diego Museum of Contemporary Art. Mm-hmm. And so she loved the belt and put them in the store there. So they were selling in that store, and then she started working at the Hammer and then wanted to do just kind of like a installation presentation of my work along with the belts, just kind of like to tell the story of the art.
Yeah.
So it was, it wasn't like I was in, you know, I had like my own gallery show at the Hammer. I know it sounds
still
like that, but
still good enough.
It was basically a display from the tins that I do, which are these small little vintage tin boxes, and I'll do the art inside of those, up to the panel pieces and then the belts, and then I was also doing some necklaces. So it was just kind of like an overall show of everything that I've kind of done with my work and the process. And I thought it was great. You know, every weekend it would be like another friend or a family member I would take out there.
Yeah, no kidding. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for you. That's amazing. I can't even imagine how surreal, you know, something like that would be. It's really great. And I I can't even imagine what's ahead for you. You're so talented, and I'm so glad I get to talk to you now before you're super famous and won't talk to me.
I don't know about that.
I do. I'm stating it right now so that I can take credit for that statement.
Yeah.
So the only thing I'm going to do, quick little speed round.
Yeah.
Get to know you questions. Sometimes they're fast, sometimes they're slow. Ready?
Yeah.
What do you prefer, the country or the city?
Country.
Oh. Favorite movie?
Doom Generation popped into my head.
I don't even know what that is. Should I?
Okay, yeah. Yeah, very old Greg Araki movie, one of his first.
Okay.
that's my 15-year-old self speaking, actually.
Okay, good. Well, my 15-year-old self would have said Dirty Dancing, so there you go. Okay. I didn't know how to word this properly, so I might have to say it twice. Which famous person, dead or alive, would you want to own your art?
Oh, gosh.
Like a celebrity or an artist, or like who would it blow your mind to know that they had one of your pieces in their house?
Well, you know what kind of blows my mind is John Hamm owns one.
No.
Yeah, that's kind of great, right?
That's not even fictional. So... how?
His partner is, you know, I don't know if they're together or what the deal is there, but she was friends with one of the galleries that I work with, and they bought 3 pieces, actually. Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Do you know what? I put a post together with every podcast. Do you know which ones they got? I guess you might.
I could try and find. I mean, I remember one of them, but yeah. I don't remember the other.
That is so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that's pretty good. I'm sure I could think of someone that I would, you know, love to own one.
But, yeah, but that's a pretty good one. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll take that.
Yeah.
And then finally, if you could live anywhere in the world, where would you live?
Oh, that's tough because I think that's why I still live in LA. I'm spoiled by the weather and I can't really imagine myself living anywhere else.
You know what's so
if
funny?
Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, everybody that I ask this question to that lives in LA always says, I just stay in LA.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. I mean, if anything else, it would probably be like a secluded, weird jungle type place, you know, in like Brazil. You know, I don't know.
Oh, that sounds pretty good too. You could do half the year there, half the, and you would just never feel cold ever.
Yeah, yeah, I think it's great.
I live in Canada, so if you ever want to come and see a whole bunch of pine trees.
Hey, I think that's perfect.
I know. I live on the side of a mountain too.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So there you go. But
yeah. Yeah, I just moved from East Hollywood to Highland Park, which has a lot more hills and more treed, and you know, I found bird nests, and just today I was watering out front, and like, you know, a alligator lizard crossed my path, and I feel a lot more close to nature here, even though I'm still in the city.
Nature boy is back.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a perfect way to end. Nature boy started it, and nature boy ended it. Thank you so much for taking time to do this with me, and I can't wait to have an excuse to write another post about you and and show all your work to everybody because it's just so, so good.
Thank you. Yeah, I need to get a lot more work going. I mean, I'm happy with where it's going, but yeah, thank you. And of course, like I open up your blog religiously and check the work that you show. So I feel very, feel honored to, you know, have you ask me to do this.
Oh my gosh, my pleasure. I had so many questions. So next time I'm in LA, we'll actually have to meet next time.
Yeah, that's great.
Okay, that sounds good. All right, well, thanks again, and I will talk to you soon.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
Bye.
Hi.
Are you still there?
Yeah, I don't know how to.
You don't know how to. You don't know how to turn Skype off. Thank you for getting Skype so that you could do this.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks. I didn't. I mean, I knew about the layers, but I didn't know like all that stuff and.
Yeah, yeah, and I still feel like I probably missed a lot of things that I could have mentioned, but, you know.
We'll do a part two.
Yeah.
Yeah,
and it's tricky of, like, how much information should I give about my process, and, you know, if people are going to do it, they're going to do it, so.
Well, I know, that's the thing. It's like, you don't want to give your secrets away, right?
Yeah, it's kind of too late, though.
Yeah.
it's been written here and there, and, yeah.
Well, I mean, but it also takes your hand, right? Like,
yeah.
I could draw something and dip it in resin, but it is certainly not going to look like what you do. I can't even imagine the mess that would be on me, let alone in my acrylic mold. But
it is messy, for sure.
I'm sure. Do you have a, I was going to ask, I forgot to ask this, are you in a studio, or do you have your studio at home?
I do have a studio, yeah, which is actually my friend, it's in downtown, it's in a loft in downtown off of Spring Street. Mm-hmm. It's actually like if you picture a Los Angeles loft in downtown, it's exactly what it looks like. It's really cool. My friend Jessica, she lives there, and then I rent a section of it. We found it together and kind of like got it together when we split it. So it's kind of perfect. Like, I don't know why more people don't do this where, you know, she goes to work, I go there during the day. Today I stayed here because it's quieter and I just moved in. And
well, that's really smart.
Yeah.
And I guess you must need a ton of space to build that stuff. And
yeah, there's a lot more space there. And there's some open areas and stuff, so the resin isn't too bad. I make sure to do it when she's not around.
Yeah. She comes home to this just resin-filled house.
Yeah.
Good night.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, well, thank you again. And this will be up not this coming Saturday, but the next.
Okay, cool.
And I'm going to pop over to your site and grab a bunch of stuff. And if there's anything I can't find, maybe I'll just shoot you an email.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
No problem.
Okay, bye. So much talent and such a sweet guy. I think my favorite part, though, is when you can actually hear the excitement in his voice when he starts talking about photographing nature and playing with all of those layers. It's so infectious. I want to go make stuff now. Thank you so much to Brooks for taking a break from his drawing and resin pouring to do this with me. Thanks to Satyar for supporting the episode. And just in case I don't say it enough, thank you so, 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 so much for listening. There will be more Art for Your Ear next weekend. See you then.